My name is Erin Rooney. I'm a PhD student at Oregon State University, but today I'm going to be presenting on my master's research, which I did at the University of Wyoming, and that was on wheat, cover crops, and phosphorus cycling. So southeastern Wyoming, a big portion of it is dedicated to a non-irrigated crop, wheat, non-irrigated wheat, and Wyoming is a really harsh place to try to grow a non-irrigated crop. We have very low precipitation, about 300 millimeters or 12 inches annually. We have really high wind, and that precipitation is variable. So one summer you might get more, the next summer you might get less. And you don't really know what's coming, so farmers have a hard time investing money in something like a nutrient input because they don't know if they're going to make that money back. They may not see a return on that investment if the moisture is so low that it constrains the wheat yield. So instead, they practice a wheat fallow rotation. So a season of wheat followed by a season of fallow where nothing is grown and the soil is tilled. This means there's not a lot of input going into the soil, not a lot of residue input. And this has led to very low soil organic matter. And that's a really big problem because with such low precipitation, we really need that soil organic matter to increase our available water holding capacity so we can efficiently use the little bit of moisture that we're getting. An obvious solution to this problem are cover crops. Unfortunately, this is kind of what cover crops look like in Wyoming. When I presented for the Oregon State people, they told me that the picture was too dark, so they couldn't see the cover crops, and I don't think it was the quality of the picture. Also, cover crops tend to deplete the subsequent wheat yield because they're using up that moisture and the nutrients that would have been stored over the fallow season. And then, as you can see, we don't get a lot of cover crop biomass, and you need a certain amount if you're going to affect your soil organic matter. There has to be a certain amount of that biomass there. And then the final nail in the coffin for Wyoming's harsh conditions are that we have really low available phosphorus. That low precipitation means that we have a lot of calcium carbonate in our soils. That precipitates phosphorus out, and the wheat can't access it. This is a problem. Phosphorus deficiency can also lower yield. And if they're only getting a wheat crop every other year, they need, you know, those yields. They can't get lowered. And then we also have delayed maturity, which if you have a short growing season, that's a problem. So not only do we have this moisture issue, but we also have a potential phosphorus issue. So what we decided to do in our research was to focus on this phosphorus problem. What we wondered was, certain cover crop mixtures or species have been found to be able to solubilize that precipitated phosphorus. So if we are able to find those and to plant them, would they be able to increase the phosphorus availability and be able to maintain wheat yield or at least not deplete it as much so that cover crops could be integrated? Then over time, we would hopefully be able to increase the soil organic matter and the water holding capacity. But we would have enough time to integrate the cover crops to actually achieve this. So to summarize, this is what we were wondering. What is the effect of certain cover crop species or mixtures on the wheat biomass and the phosphorus availability in our calcareous soils? To answer this, we had two studies, a greenhouse and an incubation study. We used the same soil for both. We got it from our research extension station in Lingle, Wyoming, which is in this southeastern region, very dry. Calcareous soil, not a lot of organic matter, not a lot of available phosphorus, plenty of total phosphorus that's been precipitated. We didn't constrain moisture. We needed something to grow. It was a two-year master's project. We needed something to grow to see how it interacted with the phosphorus. This definitely has ramifications when we get into how applicable these results are and how they can be brought to the field. So the greenhouse experiment, let's get into the cover crops that I got to use. So this first treatment, I had 9 treatments total. This first one is a mixture. So it's all of my cover crops combined, radish, faba, buckwheat, and oat. We chose them based on research that they had an interaction with solubilizing or storing phosphorus. My next treatments were each of them individually just by themselves to see what would happen. And then we paired each of them with oat as pair treatments, and then we had a fallow no cover crop treatment. The design, so we planted the cover crops, terminated them at first bloom, chopped them up, mixed them in with the soil. Then we planted wheat, grew it, terminated it, chopped it up, repeated. have to note that we were a little bit impatient and we grew wheat in the decomposing cover crops. That would not happen in a Wyoming field. And it actually led us to some really interesting findings that I'll get into in a little bit. But it was kind of a good accident, so sometimes it pays to be impatient. So we looked at the biomass of the cover crops in the wheat, just at the weight, and then we did a phosphorus fractionation on the soil following each wheat rotation. That phosphorus fractionation looked a little bit like this. We got available and reserve phosphorus because together they really represent the total phosphorus that's available, since that reserve pool is thought to buffer the available pool. The fixed phosphorus, that's what we were looking for those cover crops to act on. That is what is not available to the wheat. And then the organic phosphorus is once that phosphorus has been taken up into the cover crop biomass. Then our incubation experiment, we had done a little bit of the greenhouse at that point. We had an idea of what was interesting, so we pared down our cover crop treatments to the mix, the radish, faba, and oat, the faba with oat, and then the no cover crop fallow. So the purpose of this incubation experiment was to really zero in on what is happening as these cover crops decompose. So we grew the cover crops, terminated them, mixed them with the soil, and then we incubated them and took samples every 4 weeks. And what we did with those was we looked at a phosphorus fractionation. We wanted to know what was available in the soil, how was it moving between the pools, and when that was happening. And then we also looked at enzyme activity because we wanted to know how enzymes were acting on that organic matter. So we looked at carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus cycling enzymes. So transitioning into our results, we found that cover crops increased wheat biomass. This was a great finding. It is in a non-moisture constrained environment, but it's still always great to see. We found that every cover crop treatment except for the radish oat was followed by significantly more wheat biomass than the fallow on its own. We also found that the more cover crop biomass there was, the more wheat biomass followed. So this really ties in with that first finding. This is a positive correlation between the wheat biomass and the cover crop biomass. So if a cover crop produced a lot of its own biomass, a lot of wheat biomass tended to follow. My treatments that really followed this trend nicely were anything that contained a legume. So my faba oat, and my mix. I had some outliers that produced not a lot of their own biomass, but a lot of wheat biomass followed. That was radish and oat. You can probably guess from me saying that I did not look at below ground biomass. If I had, I think for sure the radish might have followed that trend a little bit better. This makes a lot of sense, our next finding. The more cover crop biomass there was, the more enzyme activity occurred. That should happen, right? So the faba, this is the blue circles show the faba. In our incubation study, there was a lot of faba cover crop biomass, much more than the other treatments. And so we saw significantly more enzyme activity on that biomass than on the oat and the fallow in every enzyme. And the oat did not have a lot of cover crop biomass in our incubation study, and neither obviously did the fallow. It had no biomass. So I want to start to tie all of these together, and this correlation does it really nicely. We found a negative correlation between organic phosphorus and wheat biomass. This allows us to string all of these together. So the more cover crop biomass there was, the more enzyme activity followed because it's acting on that biomass, that substrate, the less organic phosphorus there was because it's being decomposed. Other organic matter is also being decomposed. We're looking at this through the phosphorus lens, but organic phosphorus was being decomposed and it was decreasing, and then wheat biomass was increasing, potentially because that's when all these nutrients are being released. It's obviously not just phosphorus that's being released. There's nitrogen, there's micronutrients, so I can't say that available phosphorus occurring in this system is what is causing the wheat biomass to increase, but a little bit of support that phosphorus did play a role was that we found significantly more available and reserve phosphorus following cover crop residues than fallow. So, and we should have found this. This is over the 12 weeks of that incubation. So this is what's happening as the cover crop is decomposing. And just a reminder, this is what's happening as we were growing the wheat. This is what was available in the soil, because that's what the purpose of the incubation experiment was to get an idea of that. So the faba, the mix, and the radish all had significantly more available and reserve phosphorus than the fallow. And then the faba oat had significantly more reserve phosphorus than the fallow, even though it didn't have as much available phosphorus. So the finding that I would really like to focus on is at first glance not that helpful of a finding. The more cover crop biomass there was, the more wheat biomass followed. This is not necessarily applicable to Wyoming soils because we need a lot of biomass for this finding to really work, and this is kind of what we're dealing with. So this is what we had in the greenhouse, that's what we have in the field. How can we utilize these cover crops that we saw really benefiting the wheat? I came up with an idea. It's not something that we've tried. I just realized after Heidi's presentation that it might be called the planted green, so I'm glad that I went after her so I could learn that. But what I'm recommending, let me just give you an idea of what it would typically look like. So we would have a season of wheat. So you plant wheat in the fall, it germinates, it overwinters, and then it grows in the spring when the snow is thawing and melting. There's enough moisture, there's warmer temperatures, that's when it does the bulk of its growing. And then in the summers when it finishes and we harvest it, and we would normally do the cover crop in the fallow season. Instead of doing that, what if we found a way to plant the cover crop, something that would produce enough biomass in the short amount of time of the fall, but it does have some moisture coming in the fall. So what if we planted that cover crop with the wheat, it had a little bit of time to grow, and then it would have to winter kill. And then in the spring, as the temperature is warming, we have enough moisture actually for decomposition and enzyme activity. Those nutrients are being released to the soil as the wheat is growing, doing the bulk of its growing. So in that way, we would hope that the wheat would be benefited by the decomposition of the cover crops, and we're not losing the nutrients a couple months down the road when we would normally be planting the wheat, or more than a couple months, typically. Again, it's not a ready project. There might be one iteration of it that works. It's hard to know, but it's something that I think would be worth trying in some way and looking into. Our farmers are really interested in integrating cover crops. It's something that they're passionate about. They're interested in their soils and improving them. And as the climate becomes becomes warmer and the weather becomes more and more variable, we need to find ways of improving their soil organic matter so that they can have resilient soils and they can continue to farm the way they've been doing for many years. Thank you very much. I have a lot of people to thank, including my funding. Do I have time for questions?
Yes, you do.
Oh, I do. Oh, okay. Are there any questions? Yeah. So what would differ? What are you wondering about? That's interesting. So the question is, if it was a neutral soil, how would the results differ as far as the biomass? Is that correct? So that piece is kind of asking if the phosphorus would still matter. Is that kind of what you're wondering? That's a really good question. That actually might be a good way to see if kind of compare to see if the phosphorus is what role it is playing, because I don't know. It might be difficult because there's a lot going on with the chemistry. It might be hard to translate that. You might wind up finding a lot of different things when you change to that pH. I'm not sure. Is that all?
Yeah, great. Thank you.